And welcome to this week's Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. I want to thank you all for joining in, especially those for those who were listening to the Snark Factor for sticking around tonight. I should warn you ahead of time that my co-host Susie and I, well, we've already been partaking of the fermented drink. In our homage, if you will, to Senator Marco Rubio, everyone has been washing themselves in some sort of way with water. Well, beer has water.
I just took a big gulp.
There you go. To Senator Rubio. And that big gulp comes to you live from St. Louis, Missouri. She is the Smoozie Q. Susie.
Hi,
how are you?
See, I'm stepping all over you already.
I know. That's okay. Excuse me while I take a drink.
No problem. I think we need to do a lot of that tonight.
Yes, we do. Okay. So let's start off talking about, because frankly, we're going to be straightforward with you people tonight. And I don't mean you people in a racist way, just listeners.
Gotta watch that, Josh.
I know, really. Anyway, I'm going to be straightforward with my listeners tonight. Honestly, there was no preparation for tonight's show. One half of us. One half of us actually did prep tonight. Her name is Susie Moore.
Yeah.
And I just recently started reading articles that she said, hey, let's discuss these tonight. And I was like, okay. And we will get to those. But first, the news, because if you all recall, last week's show happened to occur during the State of the Union address, which I know you all watched. Oh, wait. None of you watched it? I did. And I guess I could share some of my thoughts, but really that doesn't matter at this point. Because
I'll go with it. Whatever.
Yeah, whatever. Because honestly, the news of the night wasn't so much that Barack Obama wants to, you know, continue increasing our deficit, even though he says he doesn't. Mm. I did love the RNC video that came out just before the State of the Union address, where it constantly was playing clips of President Obama saying that he has not raised the deficit or was not going to raise the deficit one dime during his first 4 years. And according to the math, he raised it by, 5.8 trillion dimes. So that was kind of cute.
Nice.
Yeah, there were actually a couple things I did agree with the president about. You know, I like some of his ideas about education reform. Not keen on universal preschool, but still, I like some of the ideas of education reform, especially as we are talking about trying to prepare students for jobs of the future. Mm-hmm. We need to take a different look at how we educate children. Mm-hmm. And I also agreed with, not necessarily agreed, but I appreciated his commentary and agreed that we do need to look into it, immigration reform. And I was pleased that he brought up the bipartisan proposal led by Senator Marco Rubio.
Oh,
I didn't say I agreed with the Susie.
Well, no, because you know what happened after that, though.
Ah, yes, Senator Rubio.
Well, no.
No, what?
I don't mean to get us off track, but the whole immigration reform thing, you know, they leaked the White House, like, plan B that's supposed to be their counterattack to the bipartisan Rubio proposal. So that's caused a little stir.
You know, seriously. Okay, the president gets up there, lambastes Congress, i.e. Republicans, for getting in the way of his agenda. Mm-hmm. And saying that we need to work together in a bipartisan fashion to get something accomplished. Here we have immigration reform. It equally pisses off Republicans and Democrats. So I say we're moving in the right direction.
Right.
And the president is like, screw you people. I got my own plan. And you know what? It's a lot more easier than yours.
I believe that Rubio's response to it, if I saw the quote correctly, was either it's dead on arrival or he may have said, dead in the water, which would have been very apropos.
It would have been.
The
yes.
water connection.
Yes, yes. I believe he said DOA.
Yeah.
But yes, he basically did say that. And good for him. Mm. You know, and frankly, this should be where Senator Rubio really starts reaching out to those Democrats who have partnered with him to put together this immigration proposal together and basically screw over Senator Reid. You know, be like, hey, all I need is 51, bitch.
And couldn't happen to a nicer guy.
I know. I know. But speaking of Senator Rubio, that... okay, so... I knew that I was going to probably be doing radio the next day, you know, so that's the only, honestly, that's the only reason I watched the State of the Union address is because I would probably have to be giving some commentary on it.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in and out during Senator Rubio's response because, frankly, I was like, it's going to be more of the same. It's not really going to stir me to action, you know, I'm not going to be all inspired, you know, I don't get inspired by senators.
You weren't thirsting.
No, I was not thirsting. For Senator Rubio's response, I will say this. The few times that I looked up, you know, I was like, okay, dude, we get it. You use a teleprompter. And that was okay. I don't diss people for using teleprompters. I don't diss the president all that often for using a teleprompter. Because all presidents use teleprompters, people.
Right.
But what caught my eye was, I swear to you, I was looking down, typing something out, and I looked up, and I just saw him do this nosedive for his water bottle of Poland Springs.
It was pretty amazing.
And I was like, and he did it in that way that you totally are trying not to lose your place in the teleprompter, because you're like, oh crap, it's still moving, I can't lose my spot. And
there was a bit of a panicked look on his face.
Totally
there?
A panicked look. And I had to chuckle. And then, you know, and so I tweet something harmless about it, but I'm seeing all these people, all these Republicans being like, if all you could do is say something about Marco Rubio's water, then you got something wrong with you, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, calm down, people. It was kind of funny. You know?
No. It was very funny.
And then, obviously, this is the thing that blew up. Nobody, okay, what was going on before the President's State of the Union? The Christopher Dorner.
No, I don't know.
It was the Dorner situation. They finally cornered the guy and they blew his ass to smithereens. Right. All right? That happens before the State of the Union. After the State of the Union, Watergate. Nothing. No, the president had this big old speech outlining tons of stuff that he wants to do, and no one is talking about it.
Mm-hmm.
Not a soul. And
intentional or no, he upstaged him.
Totally upstaged him. And I have to admit, I have been bemused by the reaction from the left and from the right about this whole thing. I mean, from CNN saying that Senator Rubio's career has jumped the shark.
That was wishful thinking.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously, CNN? Seriously. I mean, I would expect that kind of commentary from MSNBC, but CNN? And then the next day, the geniuses who do the marketing for Senator Rubio come out with the water bottle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to... Go ahead.
I was just going to say, did you see... I sent you a link for it. M. Zanotti had a piece today in Daily Caller about that
very
thing.
Yes, she did, and I missed it.
It was great.
Tell me about it.
Very worth the read. Well, I mean, first of all, how can you not love Emily?
Oh, love Emily!
I mean, she's so...
here's the thing that I love about Emily, mm-hmm. is that, you know, the first time I came across her, she seemed to be like this raging Ayn Randian libertarian, you know, pushing all the buttons of the GOP, and then she has kind of transcended all of that. I remember seeing her heavily involved at the RNC at the convention. Involved with the Romney campaign, and I wasn't thinking to myself sellout at all. I was like, "You are awesome," you know, because what she hasn't sold out people. Emily is still libertarian as you can get, but frankly, she wants to win. You can't blame
her.
She
does. She does,
and she calls a spade a spade. Love Emily Zanotti.
No, I had the great pleasure of meeting her. I met her briefly, I think, at And I can't say for sure that I met her at CPAC, but I did definitely have the pleasure of meeting her at Write Online last year and have enjoyed speaking with her ever since. And I love reading her stuff. Mm-hmm. She has a great piece on it today in Daily Caller. And there's a paragraph from it that I kind of want to read because I thought she did a very nice job of pointing out how even though some people viewed this as a gaffe on Rubio's part, mm-hmm. this is actually the perfect opportunity for Republicans to capitalize and start, you know, taking back the culture, if you will.
Via a water sip?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, explain. Yeah. Let Emily explain it here. What does she say?
Well, and I won't read the whole article. There's a paragraph in the middle of it. It says, since that fateful election day in November, Republicans have been struggling with their apparent obsolescence in the face of voters empowered by the Obama campaign to cast a ballot while reserving their critical thinking for other matters like Justin Bieber. It's become obvious that failing to embrace a rapidly changing culture is one of the key problems of the conservative message. And judging by the civil war now taking place inside conservative structures, no one really has a clue how to address the problem other than to assume those darned kids will all just have to grow up sometime or to continue the effort of putting khaki pants and blue blazers sporting college Republicans in front of young audiences and assuming the spirit of Reagan will shine through their preppy exteriors and warm the very hearts of the cynical consumers of modern culture. She's right.
Oh.
That approach is not working. And she then goes on to point out how Rubio's getting, you know, he basically jumped on the opportunity and turned it into kind of a, a humorous, self-deprecating kind of thing and capitalized on it.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's the kind of savvy and recognition of what appeals to younger people these days that I think is much, much needed on the right side of the aisle. So I think she does a very good job of laying that out.
Bravo, Emily. I mean, that was some biting criticism, but yet, I mean, completely honest is what it was.
Right.
And she weaved in Justin Bieber at the same time. I mean, again, the woman is genius.
She is.
The woman is genius.
I respect her very much.
So... yeah, this whole Rubio thing. I mean, she's honestly, Emily is dead on, especially as far as how Republicans come at things. And I mean, and we can get into this a little bit more probably in the next segment. But you sent along an article from Real Clear Politics by Heather
Wilhelm,
yes, and. Again, kind of addresses this whole thing, the civil war that is growing, you know, that is going on between or going on within the Republican Party. And it really kind of lays things out in a very clear and concise way and being like, people, OK, grow up. Here's what's happening. Here's what these groups are doing to hold us back.
Mm-hmm.
And again, it was. Just pointing out things that are absolutely 100% true. And it breaks my heart that Mark Warner decided to back out of the show at the last minute.
Claiming
he had to be, you know, at some meeting in a neighborhood.
I happen to know via Twitter that whether he had a neighborhood meeting or not, he had an earlier meeting at Scotty's Brew House with Bri Tupper and a few other tweeps that we know. So,
oh,
just saying.
Uh huh. Okay. Okay. So he's using this neighborhood thing as.
I'm going to put that neighborhood meeting quotes, little sneer quotes there.
Because one of the lines in this article I wanted to use against him tonight because it describes him perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
He's a weak kneed sellout establishment pantsy pants.
Hmm.
Ah. And I was totally going to introduce him as that and play the intro music.
Well, we can still introduce him as that. He just won't be here.
That's a good point. That's an
I
absolute...
could try to imitate him, but
no,
I don't want to do that. No, that's not
good. We don't want to...
I don't think I could ever really capture the essence of Mark Warner.
Oh, no one wants to do
Couldn't
that.
Do it justice. I do some mean impersonations, but I just don't think I could do Mark Warner justice.
I wouldn't wish that upon anybody, Susie. Well, so tonight we are missing out on our week-need sellout establishment pansy pants because he has had a quote-unquote neighborhood meeting with Bri Tupper and some other people at Scotty's Brew House.
Mm-hmm.
Still.
Mm-hmm.
So, anyway. Anyway, well, we are going to continue this fabulous conversation about, again, GOP messaging. This is going to be a theme, people, I feel, for this year on this show. And it's going to be a theme in general with the GOP until we kind of get our messaging straight. But there are a lot of good points made by Ms. Wilhelm in this article. Again, it's at realclearpolitics.com. I suggest everyone check it out after we're done discussing it tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And in case you, the headline, conservatives, libertarians, and herding cats.
One of my favorite terms.
That's exactly what we are right now. Anyway, so stick around. You're listening to the Smoozy Q and me here on Gillespie on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this. Something moving, feeling newer. It is real quiet, muddy water.
This is Andrew Breitbart, and you're listening to FTR Radio.
Welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With me is the Smoozy Q, Susie Moore. Susie has just cracked open another cold one.
Yes, I have.
Susie, what you drinking tonight?
I'm drinking Mick Ultra.
Nice, nice. I'm still sipping on my Kentucky Bourbon Barrel Ale. I feel, you know, again, Marco Rubio, establishment type. He's a Tea Party guy, but he's being embraced by the establishment. And in honor of our Pansy Pants, who is missing tonight, this is my homage to Rubio and Mark Warner, just with a little taste of bourbon in my beer.
Nice, nice.
Yes, yes. So anyway, we want to continue talking about the article from Real Clear Politics by Heather Wilhelm called Conservatives, Libertarians, and Herding Cats.
Yes. Highly, highly recommend this article.
Yes, and she takes freely from Peter Berkowitz, who has written a book called Constitutional Conservatism.
Mm-hmm.
And no, this isn't where you hear Mark start saying Constitution, fish sticks. No, this isn't this. This is basically breaking down the ongoing civil war that is the GOP and our many, many differing heads, the libertarians, the Tea Party activists, the social conservatives, the establishment types, everyone thinking that they know better than the other people.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing that I honestly kind of found annoying first off was that there is this apparent understanding that we think that Republicans are going to rush to nominate Marco Rubio as our 2016 candidate, that he's already crowned our 2016 candidate. And the fact that he gave the State of the Union response, I mean, this has everyone a flutter that he is our candidate. And I'm not willing to say that yet. Because, come on, people, we have, you know, 3 years before this happens again.
Mm-hmm.
A lot can happen in 3 years. I'm not ready to crown anybody our next nominee. And I remember when, as we were heading towards the end of October, people were talking about Chris Christie. And then look what happened. Sandy happened, and he started sidling up to Obama. Now no one wants to claim him.
Well, I might differ with you a little bit there.
What, you still want to claim Chris Christie?
No. I mean, I like Chris Christie fine. I don't think he's a strong enough candidate for president. I wouldn't really necessarily like to see him run. No, I'm going to differ with you about the crowning of Marco Rubio, because I've seen that coming down the pike, and I initially thought he was going to be Romney's VP choice.
Well,
and yes, anything can happen over the next 3 years, but right now he is without question top tier front runner.
I will give him top tier. I am not willing to assign anybody front runner status yet.
You
can't. I mean, again, the guy was elected 2 years ago.
Yeah.
All right, he's been in the Senate 2 years, and let us think about all let us think of all the great Republican senators who have gone on to win the presidency.
Yes, but might I remind you of a young senator from Illinois who in 2004 gave this speech at the Democratic National Convention, who then went on to become president in 2008.
Okay. What, we aren't the Democrats.
No, we're not them, but
Might I also say that he's done a stellar job of working with the Congress.
Oh, no. I'm not saying that is necessarily the wisest course that was taken or that he was the right choice. He certainly wasn't my choice. My point is, there's this tendency in the American populace to try and look for their little heroes.
Oh, definitely.
And to
yes.
rally behind a person rather than a cause or a philosophy. And, you know, just as Obama very quickly, the cult of personality very quickly developed around him, you're seeing that, and you will continue to see that around Rubio. And not only are there many on the right who are looking to him possibly to be the savior, and that's pointed out in the article, already the left is zeroing in on, oh, what can we do to destroy this person?
Well, of course, and the first thing they leap
start
at
the
is
drone attacks now.
That's right. Oh my gosh, he's selling his house that he mentioned in his speech. He must hate America and poor people.
I know. My God, he has a 2,700 square foot house. He's rich. Wait,
huh? Okay, that's only slightly bigger than my current house.
Yeah. No, the class warfare bit is not going to work with Rubio, but there'll be all kinds of stuff. And I promise you this, I predicted this months and months ago when it looked like he possibly could be the vice presidential pick.
Mm-hmm.
There will be so much Rubio birtherism.
Oh, my gosh. And then we will have the same reaction
that
the left did to us.
Oh, it'll be bad.
But
just
I mean,
brace yourself for it.
Oh, it's gonna be awful. But of course,
it'll come from the right and the left.
Oh,
it
will. We will have people on our side who think that yep, he was born in Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, no way could he be born in Miami.
Or that, regardless of where he was born, since his parents were not actual U.S. citizens at the time of his birth here, then he shouldn't have that birthright citizenship. Because there are a lot of people that are very strong opponents to birthright citizenship.
No, I get that, but I mean,
no, I mean, I'm just predicting this is what we're going to see.
It probably will, and we'll see news stories about it on CNN and MSNBC about
those kind of hushed concern, like fake concern troll tones, you know? Like,
Oh yeah.
Can the right really reconcile itself with an individual whose heritage is Cuban?
Oh yeah, after we've had this embargo with him for years, I mean, you know, which my former boss was part and parcel of, but I mean, yeah, we've kind of had this hate relationship with Cuba.
Oh yeah, well, except for their cigars.
Oh my gosh, yes. And rumor has it that the Pantsy Pants, the Weak Needs Sellout Pantsy Pants, has some Cubans for me. I know. I don't know how he got them through TSA, so I don't think that they're real Cubans.
Oh.
But, you know,
he's in Florida.
Yeah, he was in Florida.
Going in on the back alleys, doing some scouting for you? What the heck?
I don't know. It could be like that old Seinfeld where Kramer actually got real Cubans to roll cigars for him so he could call them Cuban cigars, but they rolled them too tight. And it turned out they were actually Dominicans. So
they're like the skinny jeans of cigars.
So I don't know what the Pantsy Pants got for me, but he did get me some cigars, which I told him that I will proudly smoke on the day of my daughter's birth and the day I finally land a job.
I bet that Pantsy Pants got me squat.
Mm. You know he did. You know he did. You know.
But then again. Then again, I really don't have much to talk about because while I was there for 4 days, I managed to not be able to go shopping and get a souvenir to bring back for my beau or my girl.
Oh.
And the worst part about all of it?
What?
I was going to like do the whole fake, oh, I'm in the airport gift shop and I'm going to fake it and do the best I can thing. And then we got to the Fort Myers airport, which is never crowded, and it had the security line from hell.
No way.
So, oh, no. It did. I didn't get to tell you about this last week. My friend who we were staying with basically says, okay, we'll get there an hour ahead of time. It's not a problem. No big deal. We get there. The line was backed up into the middle of the airport. And as we're getting closer and closer, my friend who was flying on my flight with me, we're like, oh my God, we're not going to make it. And there was another guy in line with us who was on the same schedule. He had a different flight.
Mm-hmm.
And he finally went up in panic to like one of the security guards who was blocking like the handicap ramp. And he's like, begging and pleading, like almost in tears. And the people around us knew our plight as well.
Mm-hmm.
God love the people standing in line at the Fort Myers airport last Monday morning, because they all said go. And this security guard led about 7 or 8 of us down the handicap ramp and let us go through security like expedited.
Whoa.
I didn't even have my shoes on. I grabbed them from the bin and ran.
Wow, that's almost like Kanye and Kim, you know, going around the
TSA
right there.
I was expecting them to tell us no.
Yeah.
But everyone was very kind and gracious, and they let us do that. And I literally sprinted to the gate with my shoes in hand.
Nice.
So I didn't even have the chance to do the whole I'm at the airport gift shop being really cheesy and picking up something to pretend like I like brought a souvenir. So I failed.
Oh, that's so sad.
I'm in a house, but I still think the pansy pants should have got me something.
He should have. And frankly, when he comes back on, next time he's coming back on, we will harass him a great deal and continue to call him a pansy pants. Well, you know, it's kind of funny. One of my libertarian friends, since we happen to be talking about libertarians, he actually returned. He returned from Washington, D.C. yesterday. His first time he's been in D.C. since he was in middle school.
Ooh.
He actually happened to be on the same flight as one of the top GOP communications guys here in the state. It was kind of funny. He was the GOP guy was sitting right behind him, and they're friends, so they, you know, they had fun with it on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
But he wore his Gadsden flag shirt, of course, because he's a libertarian, to the airport, and he had on there a little sticker that also said the TSA touched me here.
Oh. Very nice. Very nice.
He wore that as he was going through TSA.
That's just, oh my God. What, did he get any reaction? Did he
No, he didn't. He didn't see.
He probably didn't even bother to pay attention.
Oh my gosh. I thought that was so awesome.
That's funny. Well, I didn't mean to derail our segment, because this really is this article. I definitely am going to get this book.
Yes, again, this is Constitutional Conservatism by Peter Berkowitz.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I encourage everybody to read this article. We hope to have Peter Berkowitz on the show sometime, because after we read this, we're like, dang, we got to have this. the guy, just to kind of sum up, he kind of goes through every single one of the demographics within the Republican Party right now, and basically, and what they all think of each other. He says that libertarians tend to think social conservatives are a bunch of uptight, repressed preppies who mess up every important election with their laser beam fixation on gay marriage, school prayer, and squelching fun of every kind.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to take a bit of a... He was right, but, you know...
That's the perception.
You know, I was like, wait a minute, don't be picking on my Alex B. Keaton.
But no, he doesn't...
he was a preppy. And right. I wanted to be, in 1988, I wanted to be Alex P. Keaton.
And I so didn't.
No. As we discussed, you were the Mrs. Keaton. You were the Meredith Baxter Burney.
I was very much the mama of that show. I was much more earthy and liberal. And
yes.
La 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 la. I'm not stealing from Boy and the Snart Badger.
No, absolutely not.
I'm improvising there.
Yes. But, I mean, and he goes on, I mean, and again, he mentions the Tea Partyists, you know, how they tend to think that anyone who is not Tea Party is weak, needs sellout establishment, pansy pants. And that is Mark Warner.
That is. Well, that really is. That and the Dancing Rhino.
Yes. Yes. But and the funny thing here is he goes on to say the key to political success is moderation. Quote, I do not mean that that conniving and cowardly offspring of expedience and ambition that betrays principle to get ahead or just get along. I refer instead to political moderation, well understood, which accommodates, balances, and calibrates to translate rival and worthy principles into praxis. Holy crap, that is just rational thinking right there.
Yeah, it sounds like this book might be just chock full of some common sense.
Oh my gosh. And this was... Oh, this really kind of stuck out to me. He says, but the devil, as always, in the details. Moderation, quote unquote, rather regarding taxes, spending, or the issues of culture, life, and death, is often in the eye of the beholder.
Mm-hmm.
In ye old valley of unheritable cats, and cogent unifying agenda will be difficult to pull together. That is, at least until the liberal blue state model completely falls flat. Berkowitz also admits that the darker side of compromises, Mark Warner, made in the past, most notably regarding slavery and the ratification of the Constitution.
Right.
Right.
I mean, sometimes compromise is not pretty.
No.
But I think that the point of it is, too, that there's, you know, without some compromise somewhere, we're never going to get anywhere.
No, absolutely. I mean, there has to be some sort of pragmatic compromise. Yeah. And it can't be full-on compromise. And that's why I guess I'm open to this immigration deal that Rubio and his bipartisan cadre have put together.
I think it's at least worth a discussion. It's at least worth a review.
It is. And as President Obama liked to say during the State of the Union, it deserves a vote. You could vote yes, you could vote no, but it deserves a vote.
You know, I've come up with a new nickname for our president, and I can't. It's like the I just every time I hear him speak.
Yeah.
I don't know if I can bring myself to say it out loud.
It's not going to get our show busted by the FBI, is it?
No, I'm not really worried about that. I mean, it's just, I have such respect. And since this is President's Day, we're recording this on President's Day. And it's, the whole point of this day is actually to honor past presidents. It actually isn't to honor this particular president, but all past presidents, and to honor the office. And I do feel strongly about it, which is why, even though I voted for Bill Clinton twice, I really, really, really am mad at what he did to besmirch the honor of the office.
Thank you.
And unfortunately, I've gotten to the point, and this is why I didn't actually watch the State of the Union address or even try to go back and listen to it, because there's two words that come into my mind whenever he speaks.
Does one of them start with bull?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. But it's just mendacious twit is what comes to and I really, really hate that. And I kind of hate him for making me think that of him. I should take responsibility for my own perceptions and my own thoughts. I can't lay them off on anybody else. But I don't like the fact that I feel that way about our current office holder. It really makes me disenchanted and unhappy with the whole state of affairs. That said, when he says anything should be put to a vote, I mean, all I hear him saying is basically do it the way I want it to be done. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't think he really wants it put to a vote if it's like an actual fair vote where the people in Congress actually debate it and, you know, reach some sort of resolution on it. It doesn't seem like that to me.
I don't care what you do. Put it to a vote.
Put it to a vote. And I hear put it to a vote, and I hear do what I want you to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, kind of like how he feels about global warming. You know, hey, you're going to do this, and if you don't, well, I'll do it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because I know better.
Yeah. Mendacious twit.
I know. Isn't that bad? That's really bad. I feel like I'm going to go to hell now for that.
People, can you tell that we have a doctor lawyer on the show? Yeah, hearkening back to last week's show. If you missed it, check out the archive, and don't you dare miss our interview with Terry Kristoff from Smarkle Politics. No. And also find out why Susie's a doctor.
I am.
Yes. anyway, mendacious twits aside, I do want to...
You know, Fingers Malloy saw them open for somebody back in the 90s.
I saw mendacious twit open for men wearing hats.
Oh.
Ah!
That was a nice double bill.
Thank you. Yes, it was. Yes, it was. I don't remember the first half. I actually refer to President's Day as Mattress Day.
Oh, yes.
In fact, I told my kids, they're like, what day is it today? Because they're like, oh, it's a holiday. And I said, well, it's Mattress Day.
Uh-huh. You want to know why?
Because George Washington cut down a cherry tree and we get great deals on mattresses?
Yes, that's right. No, in honor of it being President's Day and this being kind of a month that has holidays in it, like Valentine's Day and everything, I did a little research.
Oh,
went back and did a little research on the history of President's Day and all that sort of thing. And, you know, the wonderful source of Wikipedia.
Oh, yeah. Nothing's wrong there.
Mentioned, you know, this has only been quote unquote President's Day and officially recognized as such for like 30 some odd years, because there was this movement for a while to do this, to recognize. I mean, it originated from Washington's birthday, but then Abraham Lincoln's birthday is also in February, and there was all this sort of push towards it.
Yes.
But what really cemented it was the push in the mid-80s from advertisers who wanted the opportunity to use it as their big blowout sale day.
Wait a minute. So you're saying this truly is a Hallmark holiday? Sort of.
Pretty much. I mean, no, the concept has been there for a while. And it is, you know, and the individual states have recognized the both Washington's birthday, and then some of like Massachusetts recognizes their own. They recognize Washington's birthday, but then they also have an annual President's Day in May. And that's John F. Kennedy's birthday, but it also honors him and John Adams and John Quincy Adams and Calvin Coolidge. So each of the states kind of has their own way of doing things, too.
Oh.
But this whole national push to like have this big national federal holiday on a Monday, blah, 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 it really picked up steam and became cemented in our culture in the 80s because the, you know, the advertisers.
Well, thanks.
Yay, capitalism!
Thanks.
Yay!
Thanks, Sal's Lumbar Yard.
And Spatula City and places like that.
That's right. Spatula City! Oh, may have to run that again this week. Anyway, all right. Well, people, we may have just had Susie's Law and I didn't even realize it.
No, actually, I do have something cute.
We
up
do!
So
sweet!
You know.
All right, Susie's Law is going to be coming up later in the show, people. All right, well, we are going to come back right after this. You are listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back. I know, don't quite feel right where we're going. I'll come uncertain, yes, but I...
Buddy, where's the spatula?
Okay, kids, let's go.
There's just one place to go for all your spatula needs.
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
A giant warehouse of spatulas for every occasion. Thousands to choose from in every shape, size, and color. And because we eliminate the middleman, we can sell all our spatulas factory direct to you. Where do you go when you want to buy name brand spatulas at a fraction of retail cost?
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
And this weekend only, take advantage of our special liquidation sale. Buy 9 spatulas, get the 10th one for just 1 penny. Don't forget, they make great Christmas presents. And what better way to say I love you than with the gift of a spatula?
Spatula City!
Spatula City!
Hello, this is Cy Greenbloom, president of Spatula City. I like their spatula so much, I bought the company.
Spatula City, 7 locations. We're in the yellow pages under spatulas.
My, where did you get that lovely spatula?
City, we sell spatulas, and that's all. Hey, I'm Buddy Romer, candidate for president, former governor of the great state of Louisiana, and I invite you to listen to FTR. That's where I am, man. It's happening.
Welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. With me, as always, is the Smoozy Q, Susie Moore.
Yay!
Hey, Susie. You know, I gotta ask you something. I gotta ask you something.
Yes.
Do you feel like you need a gun on you at all? I mean, like let's just say, for instance, I'm just gonna kind of come up with a. You know, just a random situation here, based on nothing that I've seen in the news or online. You know, let's say you're being attacked or something. You don't feel like you need a gun, do you?
Oh no, not at all. That'd just be silly because, you know, I might just get hysterical and pop off at the wrong person and accidentally shoot someone who didn't really mean me harm.
I mean, totally. You just need to chill. Right?
Yeah, I mean, that's what I understand.
Yeah. Oh, I guess this is actually kind of, I'm sorry. And again, I guess this actually wasn't, you know, just a hypothetical situation. This is actually kind of what Colorado state rep, Joe Salazar, is saying, this is according to Red State, women don't need guns if they feel like, they're going to get raped.
You know those silly women and their feelings. Come on.
Really? Really? I mean, okay. We know Republicans and how they deal with the whole rape thing.
The R word.
The R word. We don't have a, we're not very good with it. It turns out Democrats aren't either.
No.
No.
You know what? You know, I'll tell you what. It turns out perhaps members of the male gender might want to watch their step when they start discussing these touchy topics, because they have this knack.
Well, okay, Susie, in this guy's, you know, defense, he brings up a good point that you don't need a gun when you have call boxes and safe zones everywhere.
Right.
I mean, seriously, you know, it's like, you know, you're playing a game of, you know, what was it when you play a game of war with your friends and you're like, "Oh, safe zone. Can't do anything to me."
Right.
And I'm safe sure zone. I'm sure the attackers would be like, "Oh, you got me. Oh. You're in a safe zone."
She's on base.
Yeah, on base.
She's safe. You know, in response to his comments that have been kind of all over today, and I think Ben Howe already put together a video on it.
Oh, course, yes.
So good with that. Dana Loesch did a wonderful thing. She tweeted out a link to the University of Colorado, Colorado Springs Department of Public Safety list of what to do if you are attacked. And I just kind of like to review those just with everyone briefly, because these are important tips
absolutely.
That are designed to help you protect yourself on campus.
And frankly, we are all about, you know, making sure that women stay safe. Yeah, we're all about safety on this show.
Okay, so here we go. Ready?
Yeah, ready.
Number one, be realistic about your ability to protect yourself. Number two, your instinct may be to scream. Go ahead. It may startle your attacker and give you an opportunity to run away. Three, kick off your shoes if you have time and can't run in them. Four, don't take time to look back. Just get away. And that, I mean, anyone who's ever watched a horror movie knows that.
Oh, yeah. You totally always get away. Yeah.
Don't ever look back.
Never.
Five, if your life is in danger, passive resistance may be your best defense.
Wait a minute.
That's where you just lie there and take it.
Hold on. I was going to say, this reminds me of my children, you know, when they just go limp. You know, they think that that's going to stop me from getting them where they need to be. I doubt that works for women.
No. Six, tell your attacker that you have a disease or are menstruating. And scare him off with your cooties. Seven. Vomiting or urinating may also convince the attacker to leave you alone. Let's just you've already got a sick SOB who's attacking a woman in the worst possible way. But if she barfs or pees on him, he's gonna freak out.
Gosh.
Well, release he's got boundaries your, already, right?
Release your bodily functions.
Eight. Yelling, hitting, or biting may give you a chance to escape. Do it!
Oh, yeah.
Exclamation point.
Oh, yeah. That totally helped Lorena Bobbitt.
Nine. Well, she had a weapon.
Oh,
nine,
that's right.
Understand that some actions on your part might lead to more harm. Oh, really?
Okay, so all these things were leading him on, basically.
And remember, every emergency situation is different. Only you can decide which action is most appropriate.
Only you can prevent forest fires.
Thank you, Smokey Bear. Upon reading this list, I responded to Dana and Eric Erickson and Aaron RS on Twitter with, why isn't Shoot the Bastard on the list? Because of all the things mentioned, I'm thinking that might be the most effective way to defend yourself from an attacker hell-bent on doing you harm.
Hold on, where was the kick to the groin? I mean, seriously, this is...
off your shoes, so presumably you weren't going to do nearly enough damage, and you might only enrage him.
Golly! Oh my gosh!
So let's pass a law and make it illegal for women to carry guns on campus because they might accidentally get like overly startled and scared and shoot the wrong person because of the wrong reason.
Oh my gosh, that is terrible.
God forbid if you pee or vomit on the wrong person.
No,
that's bad etiquette.
I mean, seriously, how could a woman after reading that feel remotely safe out in public and by herself?
Off.
Yeah.
I read that, and I want to go kick the crap out of somebody. Seriously. And I thank God have never been attacked and never felt the need to use any of those suggestions or a gun. But that reading that makes me want to do that.
Oh my gosh. That is insulting.
It is so insulting, and it is so, I mean, okay,
yeah,
I don't know.
I like that, especially, tell me you have a VD. Oh, I've got cooties!
Right. Oh. Never mind. See you later. Out of here, sister.
Okay. Yeah, because seriously, when you're an attacker, you're totally in a right train of thought, being like, oh, I don't want to get sick.
I'm thinking if you're about to rape somebody, you already have boundary issues.
Yeah.
You know, I don't know.
Oh, my gosh.
The logic there. I mean, it's just, you know, take away one of the best strengths anyone could have against defending themselves. Because, mm-hmm. God forbid, they go crazy and shoot the wrong person. But then tell them to do all this silly ninny stuff. I don't know. It just got me, as you can tell, it got me a little wound up.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, just because, I mean, these people obviously are kind of, you know, drinking from the same pitcher. This is what, because this can kind of go along with what the list that you are reading. This is the full quote from State Representative Salazar. It's why we have call boxes. It's why we have safe zones. It's why we have the whistles.
Tweet, oh. Tweet.
Because you just don't know who's gonna be who you're gonna be shooting at, kind of what you were alluding to, and you don't know if you're gonna feel like you're gonna be raped, or if you feel like someone's been following you around, or if you feel like you're in trouble when you may actually not be. Then you pop out that gun and you say pop pop around somebody.
Right.
Wait a minute. You say pop pop. I'm sorry. If you say pop pop around somebody, I mean, seriously, are you holding the gun sideways? And
when I watched the video, I think he was starting to fumble for his words, and he said, "And you say," like he was saying, "And you say," not like he was talking about people actually realizing the words, but even so, what he said was so completely idiotic, and you could tell. You could look at the look on his face as he was saying it. He's thinking, "Oh." Oh, I'm walking into bad areas.
And he just continued. Oh my gosh. Hey,
you know,
speaking of guys who have mentioned rape in an unfortunate situation.
We don't know any of those, do we?
Oh, hey, Richard Murdoch, who...
Oh, yeah.
Seriously, we do love on this show.
I do.
We do. He is, just to kind of, you know... To kind of bring this full circle, he's thinking about running for office again.
Is he?
Yes. According,
I didn't get to read the article you sent me.
That's all right. According to Politico, he has finally gotten over basically this the whole thing, how it went open, how it went down, and he's thinking about running again. And he was quoted at a Lincoln Day that he's finally over it. And he was asked about the statement that he made. And he said, I made my statement that night and clarified as many times as I possibly can. I believe God is the author of life. And certainly I want life to be respected. Which,
right.
Apparently this guy, he just wants to make sure that you have your lights and safe zones.
Right.
Well...
Apparently, it's more important to him that the life of the would-be attacker be respected.
That's right. Oh, golly. So, anyway. Well, we've reached the end of the conclusion of this segment. And coming up next, the return of Susie's Law. You are listening to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. We'll be right back after this.
We want to welcome
Michael Moore.
I'm so impressed by what I'm seeing here.
How much of people's income do you, Michael Moore, want the government to confiscate?
Probably twice what we're paying right now.
It's not envy, it's war.
Where's the rage? Where's the uprising?
Storm the doors of the New York Stock Exchange.
It is a class war.
If the wealthy paid their fair share.
For a documentary filmmaker, I do really well. I'm very blessed.
And the rich thought poverty was bad.
I do well.
They get rid of it.
What pure? There's nothing pure about capitalism.
And they know what's coming on Wall Street.
We're seeing the end of capitalism. And I say good riddance.
He is one of my favorite capitalists. No, I want to give him a hug.
Hugging More, coming soon. Check out www.huggingmore.com.
And welcome back to Gillespie here on FTRradio.com. Well, everyone, it is that time again. We started off a couple weeks ago, and it has taken FTR by storm, or at least that's what I'm saying. Anyway, it is time for Susie's Law. Susie, what's on the docket this week?
Hey, guess what?
What?
The High Court is about to have an hear argument in a high-stakes fight over, you're never going to guess what.
I know. No, I really can't.
Soybeans.
Well, they are in everything.
Well, they are.
So, okay. So what's the deal about soybeans?
It's a
Midwest product, so obviously
it
interested.
Is.
Yeah.
There's this farmer in your home state of Indiana named Vernon Hugh Bowman.
Vernon
Bowman.
Mm-hmm.
75-year-old farmer.
Okay.
He figured out a way to benefit from a high technology product. Monsanto, about 10 or 15 years ago, developed a basically a weed killer resistant brand of soybean seed.
Okay.
So that the crops could be sprayed with the weed killer and yet still be viable.
Sure. Yeah.
And they have a patent on that. They developed it. They rightly should.
Mm-hmm.
But part of their deal with that is that farmers and such can only use the seeds initially and then can't replant or, you know, kind of basically go do an end run around the use of these. And they're, of course, pricier because of their having been genetically altered and that sort of thing.
Okay, yeah.
So they have this little rule in effect that basically says you got to start over fresh with new seeds and buy the expensive seeds. But Farmer Bowman figured out, here we go. This is the bit in the article about it. These herbicide or herbicide resistant soybean seeds first hit the market in 1996. To protect its investment in their development, Monsanto has a policy that prohibits farmers from saving or reusing the seeds once the crop is grown. Farmers must buy new seeds every year. Okay. So,
okay.
No. All right. Well, Bowman found what appeared to be a loophole in this rule. And what he did was, instead, he went to a grain elevator that held soybeans that it typically sells for feed, milling, and other uses, but not as seed.
Mm-hmm.
So those soybeans are cheaper, of course, but they're byproducts of, they're basically like second-generation descendants of these modified seeds. So they still have those resistant properties. So he's buying them on the cheap and planting them and harvesting them. And so he's basically reaping the benefit of the herbicide resistant properties, but not jumping through Monsanto's hoops. So they sued him over this. And it is about to go to argument in front of the Supreme Court this Tuesday. It's already Monsanto won in the lower courts. And a federal court in Indiana sided with them and awarded them $84,456 for Bowman's unlicensed use of their technology.
Wow.
The federal appeals court in Washington, which handles all appeals and patent cases, upheld that award. They said that farmers may never replant Roundup Ready seeds without running afoul of Monsanto's patents. So this is getting ready to go in front of the Supreme Court tomorrow. It's going to be argued, and we will soon see the fate of the herbicide-resistant soybean and Farmer Bowman in Indiana.
Interesting. So it's big big business versus the small guy farmer.
It is. And, you know, your sympathies kind of go a little bit with the small guy farmer. But then again, this did invest in this technology, and they do have a right to protect that technology.
I know, but
so
if
he, kind of sides of it.
If he went for a legal end around, I mean.
Well, we'll see what the Supreme Court has to say about it.
I guess that's what we will have to say. Well, that's this week's Susie's Law. So,
yay.
So we'll have to see what how the high court decides here in a few months. Anyway, so Susie, that brings us to the end of the show. Where can they find you on the internet?
They can find me on my blog at qwithaview.wordpress.com and on Twitter at smoothieq.
And you can find me at Josh Gillespie on Twitter and at joshgillespie.com, where you can find the complete archive of Gillespie on ftrradio.com, all the way back to season one. I tell you people, it's all there.
It is.
Seriously. Anyway, so for the Smoothie Q, Susie Moore, I am Josh Gillespie. Coming up next is a repeat of the Snark Factor that aired just before this show, so stick around for that if you happen to miss it. So for Susie Moore, like I said, I'm Josh Gillespie. Thanks, and we'll see you again next week.
Bye-bye. Don't speak like you used to. And where do we go to now that our comfort is gone? Pick up the receiver, 'cause I wanna hear.
It's 10 p.m. Do you know where your children are?